Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
It is the Boomer and the Babe Show, and this is Pete Peters. It's Friday, March 2nd, 2012, and we're broadcasting from our studio in the Feeding Arizona complex in Youngtown, Arizona, which is also home of the Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. And I just want everybody to know that in the event that you're looking for a very worthwhile charity, 501c3, to donate to, please give Valley View Community Food Bank some consideration. You can contact them at valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. The founder and executive director is Jesse Ramirez, and Jesse is dedicated to giving away the food absolutely free for those families that are in need. Tremendous amount of food goes through this little food bank. It's just amazing to see the people that are so grateful when it happens. So you would be donating to a very good cause. As I said, I'm Pete Peters, and I want to remind you about everything else that the Boomer and the Babe does. Boomer and the Babe Incorporated is involved in not only this radio show, we also have our website, boomerandthebabe.com, where you can sign up for our online magazine, Boomer Experience Speaks. Good articles there by ourselves. Some of our other contributors include those that have been on our shows in the past. So there's always some good information in there for anybody, regardless of age. In addition, we publish ebooks and mini books. Our ebook authors also have their own radio shows here on the Boomer and the Babe Network. Invite you to listen to them as well. We do promotional products. We produce videos for your websites. We are truly a multifaceted multimedia marketing company that can help you in any of your marketing needs for a small business. You can contact us at boomerandthebabe.com. Take a look around and see everything that we have posted there and things that you can get involved in as far as working with us is concerned. We have a very interesting guest today. With all this information that seems to be going around lately about the internet and privacy and issues concerning privacy and on Facebook and Facebook changing their format and Google doing various things and Twitter this and Twitter that, this lady has developed some interesting information and ways that people can, and especially younger people, can keep their information quite secretive, if you will, for lack of a better word, certainly confidential. And that's always good to know that that can happen, that we can keep that from happening and getting out, because it can cause us irreparable damage in the future. And especially with these young people, our children, grandchildren, college students, and so on, we're going to be talking about how they can keep their future a little bit more secure by working through this organization and this website that she has. Her name is Evelyn Castillo-Bach, and Evelyn is calling us today from Kosovo, where she's there with her husband, who is doing some UN consulting. And we're very pleased to have you on the line, Evelyn. Thank you very much for joining us all the way from Kosovo.
Well, thank you for having me, and it's really an honor and a pleasure to have this opportunity to speak to your audience, a very influential audience, I may add, that you cater to. And I consider it just a great honor that you have invited me to share what I know about internet privacy and what people can do to begin to take control back of their data.
Well, we're going to get into that in just a minute. Now I'm going to spring something on you here, Evelyn. I didn't tell you that I wanted to have a one to two minute movie of your life. It sounds as though you've had a very interesting life to this point. You've done some travel and so on, and here you are in Kosovo. Tell us a little bit about what you do and how you came to be in Kosovo, of all things, and what is your background, and then we'll get into your specialty.
Well, Kosovo is definitely a long way from home. And home for me is South Florida, although originally I was born and raised in New York City and actually even lived in Ohio for a few years. But Kosovo is definitely on the other side of the planet. The reason that I'm here is because my husband, who is a Dane, a Danish national, and also a lawyer, specializes in things having to do with justices and prosecutions and rule of law. And so he works as a consultant for the United Nations. And whenever I get a moment, I try to drop in and visit with him for a little while because I actually like my husband very much. And so even though he works very, very far away from home, I do my best to come and pay him a visit, and it just so happens that you're catching me at a time when I'm doing my little visit circuit. In terms of my own background, I'm a professionally trained journalist. I earned my master's degree from Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism in 1993, and I was inspired to get into the whole business of social networks when I saw how my college-age sons were using Facebook. I did what most people don't do. I actually read the terms and conditions. The terms and conditions is that little box that we all see whenever we use a website or when we use an app on our phones or whatever, where we have to click it or check it off before we can proceed. And what most of us don't realize is that that's actually a legal contract. So when I saw how my sons and were sharing, oversharing, and how their friends were oversharing, the journalist in me decided to actually read the terms and conditions, and I was just absolutely appalled at what I read. And I was tried to convince my sons that they really needed to be extremely careful of what they were posting, because essentially they had no ownership and control of anything that they were doing online. And they were rather skeptical and, yes, Maya, sure, you know, sort of rolling their eyes. And then I just decided that, you know, it's rather than just complaining about it or worrying about it, that I would actually do something about it. But I'm not a coder or a developer by training. But I decided I didn't have to be, that what I had to do was to recruit and identify very bright young developers who are also ethical and go ahead and build a platform so that college students can communicate without having all their information owned and controlled by some company or who knows who. And that's how I ended up creating and launching Collegiate Nation, which is also known as GoCNCN.com, because sadly a lot of people don't know how to spell collegiate. So we decided to have a short address, which is GoCNCN.com. And after I did that, a lot of people asked, well, I'm not a college student. How about the rest of us? And that's when I decided to go ahead and create YouMeNow, U as in the letter U-M-E-N-O-W, for the rest of us. And that's sort of like the short version of how I went from being a mom and to being an internet entrepreneur.
I'm interested particularly in when you mentioned you check this little box that I agree. How many of us actually go ahead and do just that? They check the boxes, yes, I agree, boom, and they move on. And it's not only with the internet. It's with anything and everything. I mean,
yes.
It's even if you're doing online banking, yes, I agree. And how many of us have taken the time to read the terms and conditions? Not very many, I would venture to say. And as you were saying, man, once you check that box, in particular on Facebook in this particular instance, you have just given your soul to that company store, haven't you?
Well, unfortunately, the answer to that is yes. I mean, it's a contract, and you're right. Most of us don't read it because it's very long. They all are, and intimidating. And even if you read it with great care, and even if you have a law degree or you have a degree in journalism or you've gone to the university and you have a college degree, even if you're very intelligent and you're very well read, it's written in such an obtuse language, it's written in such a convoluted manner that you really have to sit down and analyze it. And then, you know, one section will say A, then, you know, 18 paragraphs later, it's sort of has a caveat about yes, but. So it's really not easy, even if you took the time to read it, to really understand what does this document mean. But you're absolutely right. Most of us never take the time to read it. I mean, we would have to spend hours every day if we were to actually read these things every single time. We would basically have to devote half of our days to reading contracts.
Well, that is...
But
I was just going to say, that is what they call the small print.
Yes.
Literally and figuratively, that is the small print or the fine print. And that's where the details are always hidden, is in the fine print.
That's right. And there's actually been some research that has shown that nearly 70% of the people never read the terms and conditions.
I don't remember that I've ever read any terms and conditions on things like Facebook or any of those types. I mean, I don't remember the last time I read terms and conditions, period. I may have gotten to the first half of a paragraph and said, oh, baloney, this is just too much. And said, ah, what can they be doing to me? I mean, you know, what are they after, really? So I said, well, what the heck, let them just go, and I'll just do, as long as I don't do anything untoward, we're going to be fine. But in reality, that's
yes.
Not the case, is it? They're really starting to gather information, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, these contracts actually mean something, and the bottom line is simply that it's all for the advantage of the company. It's not for your advantage or my advantage or the user's advantage. It's all about them and not about us. And you tick off that box and you've just agreed to all the things that you may not know you've agreed to, and most of the time that means that they can pretty much do whatever they want with your information, including sharing that information with other parties that you don't know about, other companies you've never heard of, and with databases that you have no clue even exist. So it's actually quite serious. Now, of course, we have a lot of people in the United States and throughout the world that are experts, privacy experts, who actually read this stuff. And you have lawyers and all kinds of good people, well-intentioned people, that are actually taking this very, very seriously and are doing God's work, you may say, to try to get the word out and make sure that the rest of us understand just how serious this all is. And they're also trying to get our lawmakers to take note, because really what we need are laws that protect us, that the American consumer, from this historical data grab. I mean, what's actually going on today is the wild west of data grab. It's like the gold rush, but here the gold is us. It's our information. And we've all heard the phrase, information is power, and it really is. It's great power. The more information companies have about you, me, and all of us, the more power they have. A lot of people think, well, you know, I'm just one individual in a sea of millions. No one really cares about me. I'm safe. And that really is a fallacy, and a very dangerous fallacy. Most people imagine that somehow, you know, it's a room full of paper, you know, from floor to ceiling, and that no one will ever bother to dig out their particular information. But that's not how it works at all. As a matter of fact, just this week, I was reading, there's a company called DataSift. And DataSift has just gone into a licensing agreement with Twitter. And this company has the ability, with all its databases and its servers and all its software and all its technology, it has the ability to go through 250 million tweets every 24 hours and organize them by geolocation. So if anyone really still believes that it's impossible, that you can sort of hide in a sea of millions, they're they could not be more mistaken. The technology that we have today makes it possible for a data company to type in your name and instantly have an abundance of data about you, everything from your state of health to where you live, your address book, meaning that you're all the people that are listed in your that you have on your cell phone or on your mobile device, all the different people that you communicate via email, the stores that you shop at, what you buy. It's just a massive amount of data, and it's a multi-billion-dollar industry where this is all that companies do. I mentioned DataSift, that's one company, but there are many such companies out there that this is all they do. They actually literally troll the internet, the entire internet, looking for everything that is out there. And then they compile it, they organize it by your name, your address, your telephone number, and then it's ready for sale. And there's a lot of people who are interested in buying that information. Credit card companies, insurance companies, banks, you name it.
Here's what little I know about this. We had, several years ago, somebody, a guest on our radio show, that was involved in the prevention of phishing, RFID. I think that's what it is, radio frequency. Whatever, people could go by and scan your credit cards and get the numbers off your credit cards electronically if you didn't have them protected and didn't have them in some sort of a case. They could actually get that information off your credit cards by standing 10, 15 feet away from you and just hitting the button and scanning, and it grabbed the numbers. In addition, they were saying that when you go to the grocery store, as an example, and this is a little off the subject, but I'm sure we'll get back to the subject here in a minute. When you go to the grocery store and you use one of your customer service cards, your preferred customer cards, and swipe that, and then they ring everything up on the reader, they are actually assigning to your account everything that you buy. So now the grocery store knows, including if you're buying probably prescriptions and whatever else. So all that is now a record that they have. Beyond that, and these people were telling me that the next step in the process is going to be that when you take and you throw the trash out, that same reader that's on that car, on that can as an example, or package, will now, somebody will be able to go down the street with an electronic reader and just drive by, and they will know your eating habits by how long you've had that in your house. And they would be able to track all that information. And I said to myself, this is absolutely baloney. This just possibly cannot possibly happen. Well, I do know what happens now right here in Arizona is the public service APS truck goes down the street with one of those balls on the top of it, and it's reading all the meters as it goes down the street on both sides of the road. And it's all doing it electronically, and there's no meter reader getting out and walking from house to house to house to house. He's just driving a truck down the road and getting all the information. So if they can get that way, they can certainly get this information off of Facebook and Google and Twitter and whatever, MySpace and whatever else. And I've always been wondering, how is it that these people manage to get the ad on my Facebook page that happens to be something that I might be interested in? Explain
because
that.
They're tracking everything.
There you go.
They're literally tracking. They're tracking everything, and actually, what you're saying about the stores. So there was just recently the New York Times wrote a large piece about a father who became terribly upset when his teenage daughter started to receive her regular mail. Not her computer, but through the mailbox. She started to receive coupons for baby products and pregnancy products. Okay, and the father became so upset by this that he actually went to Target, the store, and complained and said, why are you sending this stuff to my daughter? My child is only a teenager, blah, blah, blah. Turns out that the daughter was pregnant. Target knew it, and the father did not. Mm-hmm. How did Target know that? Precisely along the same line that you're talking about, Target was actually collecting data on the purchasing patterns of all its customers. And then based on the type of products, in her case, the type of vitamins that she was buying, okay, they were able to tell that she was pregnant. So we are already there. We're already at a point where any merchant can know in advance what it is that's going on in your home in terms of your health care, not just your prescription, but something as innocuous as buying certain types of vitamins that typically women who are pregnant purchase. And as you probably have had the experience, very often it's been happening for years, and something that's personally bothered me, that why is it that if I go to buy something at a store that they ask me for my telephone number?
Mm-hmm.
This has been going on for years, and they all do it. Now, of course, you don't have to give them the phone number. Even if you're paying cash, they say, may I please have your phone number? And almost everybody says, oh, yeah, my phone number is blah. Why are you giving that phone number away, and why is your phone number important? Because now with your phone number, they can now match your purchase to you personally.
Well,
and to everyone else in your household.
It's amazing how many phone calls we get into our household.
Mm-hmm.
We're living in a situation where my 89-year-old mother is with us, and she has her own phone. And it's amazing how many people that are trying to solicit something from me or Deborah will call her number because we show up as being at that address. At that phone number, because of the names and other kinds of ways that they've managed to make the connection, and given all that information, and when you're talking about how people are data mining, if you will, it's amazing when you start mentioning things about health, about your health situations, because there are HIPAA laws that supposedly
mm-hmm.
guarantee that is not available to people, and they still get it, don't they?
They do. And actually, that's one of the great threats of public social networks like Facebook and Google, is that the type of – you're absolutely right. We're all protected by U.S. federal law, very, very strict laws, that our medical information is private. And that unless we explicitly sign off and give permission, one doctor actually can't even talk to the other doctor about your situation unless you give it written permission. So we're protected on that count. However, if you post something where, you know, you express an interest in a particular disorder or disease or a certain type of medication, or you're browsing the internet, as we all do, to find out about a certain medical condition or the side effect of a certain medication, that type of action is not protected by federal law. And the data companies, the data miners, the data collectors, they can just scoop up all that stuff and then match it to you based on other information that they have about you. Now, if you happen to belong to a public social network, it just becomes really easy to do that. I mean, it's just a cakewalk for them. Because I tell people all the time, and I'm on record for saying so, that as far as I'm concerned, Facebook is basically a data collection company posing as a social network. It's a massive data collection company. And this past year in late November, while all of us were getting ready to sit down and eat turkey and put up our tree or celebrate the holidays, the Federal Trade Commission filed an 8-count complaint against Facebook. And most of us didn't realize what was going on, but this was really serious. What the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, pointed out was that for years, Facebook has been engaged in fraudulent practices and deceptive consumer practices. And those are not my words. Those are the words of the Federal Trade Commission. And those practices included stuff like sharing people's information with advertisers. In other words, actually sharing what you posted with advertisers. It included changing people's privacy settings. So when people set their privacy settings to only show this stuff to my friends, Facebook turned around and ignored that and proceeded to share that information with advertisers and also with the different apps and games that people play on Facebook. And the, one of the reasons why this is so, so serious and why it really gets my hair up is because we actually have no idea who all these companies are. In other words, if you are involved in organized crime, you hire some of the best developers that money can buy, and you create an app or a game, and you post it on Facebook, and people start to play it. Now you can grab all the information you want from people, posing as an application or as a game. And one of the things that the Federal Trade Commission cited Facebook for was for basically misleading the public and telling the public that they were actually screening these apps when, in fact, they were not screening these apps. And just this week, the head of the Federal Trade Commission made a statement where he admitted that there's no way of knowing what information apps and games are collecting on all of us. So this whole issue is really vitally, vitally important, because something as private as our health and the medications we take, is that information is being collected through a back door, and that back door are these public social networks.
Now, that applies to not only Facebook, but it applies to all of them. Now,
it does.
As when you and I were speaking the other day, when we did a little pre-show talk, I mentioned to you that I had just switched my privacy settings on Google. So I went to google.com/history, and I could then at that point switch my settings to don't track. In other words, basically, supposedly, not to track my search habits. And also, it supposedly was going to eradicate anything prior to the 29th of February, so there was no history there. The history was gone. Now, I don't know if that actually happened or not. I did make that correction or change in my status with Google, but I don't know about that. And now they got this plus one thing, and if I do some plus one, am I eradicating that also, or is that a separate program? And you know, you just don't know what's going on. So it sounds as though it's not always the case that they're A, doing what they say they do, and B, they probably just don't even make any bones about it. They just make you think that they are, and that's all, and it's over.
That's basically it. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. You've summarized it perfectly, unfortunately. I mean, Google has also been cited by the Federal Trade Commission for violating people's privacy. And with its recent merging of all its services that you just described, the lawmakers are also very concerned that that actually there's no way of knowing what is actually private and what isn't anymore. This is done intentionally, in my opinion. Here you have some of the largest tech companies in the world. They're able to process billions of pieces of data a day, and they want us to believe that they can't figure out a way to keep our information private. That's just not credible. The bottom line is that their business model is based on advertising. And the way they make their money is by making as much information about us available to advertisers and other companies who are interested in purchasing that data. You did the right thing, in my opinion, by setting your changing your privacy settings to the most private settings possible. But the reality is, and history has shown, that there's actually no way for you to know that your privacy settings are being respected. It may well be that a year from now or a year and a half from now, it will be disclosed that, in fact, your privacy settings were ignored. And all that information that you posted is actually spread out throughout the world on thousands of databases. This is not an exaggeration. This is the world we live in today. That if a company engages in fraudulent practices. And once that information, once they share that information with other entities, other companies, other individuals, it's gone from, you have no control over it anymore. There's no way to get it back. It's just the world that we live in. And what I tell people is that the only sure way to protect your information is, first of all, don't post anything on public sites. What do I mean by a public site? By a public site, I mean, very simply, if a site depends or uses advertising as its source of revenue, then that's going to be their first customer, not you. So people need to be really aware of that. The ability to communicate via public sites is very important for many people. It's excellent for business. It's an excellent way of communicating with your customers. But it's not a good thing to do if you are communicating privately about stuff that's very personal to you. The problem is that most of us would like to be able to at least do a simple search on the internet without having it tracked back to us. And actually, there are ways that one can do that. It does involve a little bit of knowledge about how the internet works. If you're using a browser like Firefox, for example, you can set your privacy settings so that you're not tracked while you're browsing on the internet. There are also companies out there that for a charge will protect your identity while you surf the internet. There's also a free site, tor.com. I have no business interest in the company, and I don't know anyone who owns the company or anything like that. I'm not mentioning it because I have a business interest, but I do know that this is a company that you log into their site, and then you can start browsing, and there's no way for them to track you. So there are ways of at least being anonymous while you're surfing the internet. But when it comes to actually posting on sites like Google and Facebook and MySpace and all these social sites that are ad-based, you know, your guess is as good as anyone's what they're doing with that information, but chances are good to excellent that your privacy is not being protected.
Well, I have a firsthand example, I think, of what we're talking about. As I mentioned, I have an 89-year-old mother that we're all living under the same house, same roof. And she likes to watch the local PBS channel for some of the entertainment shows that are on there, and it's more of her era, if you will, of music and so on. And she has, in her recent years, found an affinity for a conductor by the name of Andre Rieu. And she likes to listen and watch the Andre Rieu when he's on. So I went looking for, on the internet, I went looking for where he might have some DVDs so I could buy her some for Christmas. And shortly after that, on my Facebook page, up pops a concert here in Phoenix for Andre Rieu, who is on tour, and he's coming to Phoenix. Now, the interesting thing about it is that I could get free tickets to the Andre Rieu concert, and I said, oh, this just can't be. This has got to be a scam. And I logged in and went and checked it all out and got the number and made the phone call, and by George, I got 4 free tickets to the Andre Rieu concert. So now I'll thank him for that one. But it's just an example of how a search can pin itself to you and be tracked to you. And I personally had absolutely no interest in going to see that Andre Rieu concert, although we did go and we did enjoy it. But, I mean, that was the furthest thing from my mind, and there it is, jumped right up in front of me.
Well, that's
really an example of what's going on, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's an example in your case of something that turned out to be beneficial, where the tracking actually provided you with some free tickets.
Sure.
And that was really nice and really cool and a pleasant surprise. But the unpleasant side of it is that if you were searching for something that perhaps you don't want other people to know about, then that's also equally as accessible. And maybe you don't see an ad offering you a service for it, but someone already knows that you have a particular interest, and it's an interest that perhaps you would rather people didn't know about. So it's a double-edged sword. But you bring up an important point, which is that on a lot of websites, you'll see the icon for Facebook like, and when you see that, that means that Facebook will know that you are on that page. A lot of people don't realize that. The other thing that people don't realize is that, and this is something that Facebook was called out on.
Excuse me, Evelyn. Are you saying these just by the nature that the icon is there, they will know you don't have to click on it to like it? Just the fact that they have
That's
the
correct.
Icon there? I'll be darned.
That's correct. I know it's hard to believe, but it's true. And most people don't realize that, but that's how it works. But if you are surfing the web by using one of these anonymous services, that they won't be able to link it back to you. But unless you do that, and you end up in one of those pages, and Facebook will know that you were there.
They're everywhere.
Facebook was recently reprimanded by using what they call super cookies. And this is just a name, a technical name for saying, you know, it's a way to track you even after you were got logged off. So people would log off of the Facebook account, and even though they were logged out, Facebook was still tracking them, everything they did on the internet.
So once it's like a heat-seeking missile. Once they're locked, once you're locked
on. Yeah, that's a good way of describing it, actually.
once they're locked on to your exhaust, they're locked on to your exhaust, and you can't do anything without them following you around.
Well, there's some things you can do. I mean, one thing you can do is don't log into Facebook. I mean, no one is forced to log into Facebook. The other thing you can do is after you log into Facebook, clear your browser. Some people don't know how to do that, but if you're using Firefox, you can go into your Firefox settings and say clear all cookies. That'll help some, unless Facebook reinstates its cookies. But the other way is, that, as I said, is to use one of these services like TOR.com, which is, you know, it's a little cumbersome, but that's one way that you surf the internet without it being tracked to you individually. So there are things that you can do. But what really needs to be done is for our lawmakers to pass laws that protect our privacy. I mean, that is really going to be the only way that we will ultimately be protected from this total invasion that's taking place. That's going to be a while, if ever.
I don't see that happening, because it's the old follow the money trail. And when you follow the money trail, it leads right back to their pocket. So, I mean, that's not going to happen.
They certainly get a lot of lobbying dollars from the big boys that involved in the tech industry, that's for sure, and from the advertisers. So you're absolutely right. You have no argument from me that there is a great disincentive to really pass laws that protect us from this type of intrusion. But I firmly believe that the more people understand what's really going on and the consequences that it has for their lives, the negative consequences that it can have for their lives, then they will begin to take action. Facebook is worth billions of dollars, but Facebook doesn't make a thing. So why is Facebook worth billions of dollars? It's worth billions of dollars because of all the information it has on everything. That's what gives us its value. It's nothing else. Facebook doesn't make a game. It doesn't make an app. It doesn't make anything. People don't realize that. They don't make a thing. What makes them valuable is the massive amount of information that they have about people and the fact that there's so many companies that want to get their hands on that information. That's what makes Facebook so valuable. And people need to realize that their information, in fact, is very valuable, and then they need to protect it. And on an intuitive level, people actually understand that. Nobody would allow a stranger to walk into their home and grab their photo album or their address book or you know, their most personal notes and so on. No one would let that happen. But yet when we interact on the internet, we somehow kid ourselves into believing that we enjoy the same level of privacy that we do in our homes. And in fact, that's not the case because there are no laws to protect us. That's not true in Europe. In Europe, they have very strict laws protecting its citizens from the intrusions of a Facebook or a Google. In fact, Facebook and Google have had a very hard time in Europe by the privacy commissioners there and the lawmakers because they're actually passing some very, very rigid rules. Just to give you an example, if you live in Europe, Facebook by law, by European law, must make available to you within 40 days everything that they have on file about you. Everything. We don't have such a law in the United States. And if we did have such a law in the United States, I think people would be aghast at the volume of information that Facebook has, because Facebook doesn't only have information that you've posted, they also have information that they've collected from other sources. And people don't realize, but that's also part of the terms and conditions, that little box that people click without reading. One of their terms and conditions is that they can do that, that they can collect other information about you. Now, they frame it by saying that they do that so they can provide you with a better service. Well, if you think that's credible, I have a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell.
Roll up your pants, it's too late to save your shoes. I don't think you're ever going to see that European law over here, because the lawyers that are in Congress and the congressmen and so on and so forth, they all have too much to hide. They don't want their stuff out there and available to anybody. I mean, there's just no way.
Well, you know, lawmakers have not exactly, and they're not going to win any gold stars for protecting us with the new technology. They are really, really behind the curve, and they also probably don't have a vested interest in doing so, because they get a lot of dollars from tech companies. I mean, that's just the reality of things. And it was because of that awareness and that understanding that, because I don't believe in wringing my hands and saying, oh, my God, there's nothing I can do. And that's why I decided to start Collegiate Nation and You Me Now, because I felt that I can do something. At least I can do something so that people can connect online with people that are important to them and not have their every thought and every association tracked by companies and sold to who knows who. This is the service that I can provide to people. My two companies have not yet developed to the point where we can let you browse the internet without being tracked, because that's not what our service is about. Our service is providing a super private social network where people can actually connect with family and friends, or in the case of Collegiate Nation, with college students, and know for sure that we're not selling that information, we're not collecting that information, and that they're not being tracked. And that I can do as an individual, and that's what I've chosen to do, because I know that we may never get to a point in our country where our privacy is protected on social networks. And because of that, we have banned ads. We don't accept any ads, because we know that that's the slippery slope, that the moment you take $1 from an advertising company, that's the moment when you have to begin to serve them. So we don't take a single dollar from advertising companies. We've also banned all apps and all games, because the reality is that when you bring into your website an app or a game that's made by somebody else, it's very, very difficult, if not nearly impossible, to know whether they haven't built in a back door for extracting information that they should not have access to. So in order to make sure that can't happen on our site, we have banned apps and games. What I tell people is, if you want to use a Facebook, if you want to use a Google, then make sure you use it in a very precise way, In other words, don't do anything or post anything that you don't want to see published on the front page of your hometown newspaper. If there's a question mark, then don't do it. The problem is that people use social networks also to connect with their friends, and people don't realize that that information is also extremely valuable. So even if you're perfectly professional and appropriate in what you post on a public social network, the reality is that there's still a wealth of information that they can garner just by the type of people that you know. So, for example, credit card companies now use information they have about who your friends are on social networks to determine whether you are a good credit risk. And how do they do that? Because even though you may be extremely careful in how and what you post, your friends may not be, and that's good enough. Based on what your friends post, they can run all that information through what they call logarithms or little software programs that sort of digest all that information and then print out a "this is what it means" statement. People don't realize that. There was a study done by a little experiment that was done by some MIT engineers 2 or 3 years ago. It's called Gaylor, G-A-Y-L-O-R. And what they did was they were able to determine with a very high degree of accuracy, something like in the 80th percentile, whether a person on Facebook was gay or not, even though that person had never posted anything that was gay-oriented, even though that person never looked at anything that was gay-oriented, even though that person never bought anything that was gay-oriented, and they could predict that based on who their friends are and what those friends did on Facebook. And similarly, you have little pieces of software, logarithms, programs out there can do that with just about anything. They can tell whether maybe you're having an affair, or whether maybe you're not in such a good marriage, or whether maybe you spend more money than you should, or whether you have certain medical conditions. And this subject of medical conditions becomes extremely important because of health insurance. Because under our laws, a company cannot just ask you up front about your medical condition. It's against the law. It's considered private information. But if they can find out some other way that perhaps you have certain medical risks, think about how valuable that might be not only to an insurance company or an insurance company or possibly an employer, because to an employer it might be considered an enormous risk to have an employee that looks like they have a tendency to develop certain diseases. So information really is very powerful, even when we don't realize that the information that we're sharing is important. We think it's not important, but pulled together, it becomes extremely important.
Well, there's any number of ways that they can be misused, obviously. And, I mean, we have to go no further than the headlines that have just been going on for the last 2 days with regard to this, the amendment to a bill in the House of Representatives, or the Senate, the Senate in Washington, as far as women's contraception. And how they're trying to get the employers, make it so that the employers can make a judgment as to whether or not they're going to go ahead and put the bill for the health insurance based on what the person wants to do with regard to their own health. That kind of information is just all over the place, and it just absolutely blows me away that these individuals think that they have the right to do it, number one, and then to try to act on it, number two. And I don't know, is this, let me just ask it this way, is it too late to unring the bell? Can we put the toothpaste back in the tube?
Well, yes and no. The reality is that once your information is out there, it's out there. And there's no way you're ever going to get it back. What people really need to understand is that they need to stop disclosing. And they need to stop now. And they need to really get the word out to everybody who will listen, people they love, people they know. This, you know, what's coming, I call it a tsunami. There's a tsunami coming. And that tsunami is going to be as devastating as the recent economic crisis that has, you know, wiped out so many people from pensions and from their homes. It's going to be on that scale. And it's going to be all based on information that people have put out there thinking that no one was interested in it. It's going to be a tsunami of people who cannot credit, a tsunami of people who can't get health insurance, or a tsunami of people who all of a sudden see that their health insurance rates have skyrocketed even though the companies ostensibly don't have any additional information that they had before. It's going to be a tsunami of people who are not going to be able to get jobs because the employer knows more than what you submitted in your resume because they can purchase massive amounts of data from data brokers who have all this information on people. And so the issue of organized crime and identity theft, this is a huge risk where you can wake up one day and your entire identity, as you know it, is gone. Someone else has literally just looked at it, not just your credit card, but everything about you. Because there's such information about people out there that you can basically piece everything together and become someone else. And then you have to prove that you are who you really say you are. So and this is a catastrophe that's coming. And it may sound a bit exaggerated and extreme, but to write it down because it's coming. It's coming because the stage is set precisely because people have not taken care. But people should not just give up and say, well, it's too late, there's nothing I can do, I'm doomed. That's not true. They can stop immediately oversharing. They can stop immediately telling the people that they care about to stop oversharing. Because when you share a piece of information, you're just not harming yourself. You're harming everybody else in your circle of friends. Because remember, they work by association. They can figure things out based on the interests of the people that you're connected with. So the only way that people have to really understand on a large scale is that they really need to not post stuff online on public sites that is in any way personal. And even on a site like LinkedIn, I was speaking to a consultant the other day who pointed out, correctly so, that even a site like LinkedIn, where people tend to put their best face forward and they're not posting personal stuff, even on a site like that, there's enormous risks of identity theft because now they have your resume.
Right.
Now they know where you've worked. And not only do they know where you've worked, they've also known all your people that you have worked with. So now it's even easier to steal your identity. So, you know, it's really quite serious. And the thing is that, you know, it's technology has moved at such a fast pace. And let's face it, it's fun. I mean, it's really cool. The things you can do online, computers, and with smartphones. I mean, it's super cool. The problem is not technology. The problem is what the companies have done with this technology and the fact that we are in the middle of seeing the most massive data theft in the history of humanity. That is a fact. That's what's going on right now. But people can do something about it. And one of the things that people can do, if you'll pardon my plugging my companies here, one of the things that people can do is join Yumi Now. You know, we have a two-level membership. One is free and one is paid. It's a subscription base. Why are we subscription-based? Because we don't take a dime, advertisers. But we have a free level of membership, which means that there's no excuse. You can communicate with your family and friends at no charge with Yumi Now, and then if you want some of the extra services that we provide, then you become a contributing member for $6 a month, which is actually pennies a day for a very small price to pay for your privacy protection. And the same thing applies with Collegiate Nation. There's no reason on earth why college students should be jeopardizing their entire future by sharing on public sites. I mean, parents, you know, they mortgage their homes, they sacrifice to pay the outrageous tuition so that their sons and daughters can go to college and have a future. And while they're doing that, their sons and daughters are posting on public sites, and all that information is being collected, and it will come back to haunt them in the future. Information is power, and when people have information about you, they're going to use it against you. So don't give it away. And that's why I created Collegiate Nation, and I created You Me Now, so I can make that contribution to people's lives where people have a choice. Up until now, people have not had a choice. So I'm not interested in becoming Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg and being worth billions of dollars. What I'm interested in doing is creating a private alternative where people can still communicate and use the technology, but do it and be protected. Our whole business model is the opposite of a Google and a Facebook and a MySpace. Our business model is privacy first, real privacy first. We serve our customers, our clients. We protect people. That's what our business model is about. It's not about collecting data and sharing data or distributing data and monetizing data. That's the terminology used in the business. We're not about monetizing data. I consider it unethical to use people's information and then profit from it. If you don't have a person's mission to use that information, if you don't have a person's permission to sell their information, I consider it unethical. Even though we have no laws that make it illegal to do that, I consider it to be unethical. And that's why I go on the record saying that I believe that Facebook and Google and MySpace and all these companies that are engaged in ad-based services are unethical companies. They have cool tools. Okay, they know what they're doing, technologically speaking, but they're unethical because they make it fun for people to give away what's extremely valuable, which is their information. People are not even thinking that they're doing. They're just enjoying the technology. And one day they'll wake up and realize, oh my goodness, what have I done? And for many people, it will be too late.
Well, it sounds to me like there's four little words that you need to start saying a lot more often, and that is, that's not your business.
Yes.
Just say to people, that's not your business. You don't have a right to know that. Now, here's another option, and this just came to me because I'm just kind of a whack job sometimes. What if we were to start a site like Facebook? And we say to people, go ahead and post freely, say whatever you want, do whatever you want, but be known up front that this information that you give us is going to be sold. It's going to be sold to the various companies that want to know more about you for marketing purposes. And when they buy that information, we split the money between the people that are on the site. Will that work?
It could. It might.
If these people are so, they want this information so badly that and they pay for it. So if they're going to pay for it, well, then let's just kick the money. Don't give it to Facebook. Give it to the people that are doing the posting based on how many posts. Figure out a formula. God, know there's somebody going to do a formula. And just let people get back a little bit of the money that's being paid for their information. May as well make money selling your information.
That's possible. That's possible. I suspect that when people know that their information is being sold, even if they get a piece of the action, a lot of people say no thank you. Because people are actually, I mean, not everybody, think that most people are inherently private. They actually don't want all their information out there going to who knows who. I mean, There's certain things we don't care if some people know, but there's a lot of stuff that we really rather other people don't know. And the sad part of what's happening today is that people are under this false illusion that because they're one in a billion, that no one can actually see them or know who they are or know what they've done or know what they've said. And of course, I hope that your listeners now know that, that technologically speaking, that's absolutely not true. It's actually quite easy, okay? So I suspect that if you had a business model like that, a lot of people would say, you know, thanks, but no thanks. I'd rather keep my own information to myself.
Well, I tell you,
and by the way, I think that's one of the reasons why Facebook and the Googles of the world have that. And it's only when they're dragged kicking and screaming by privacy experts and the Federal Trade Commission and the Europeans, because the Europeans have played a huge role in exposing the practices of Facebook and Google in particular, and I keep on mentioning them because they're the two big boys in the world on the stage. That you know, when it's all because of this attention that they have gotten about how they are violating people's privacy, that we are now beginning to see a movement of people saying, you know, this is not okay. What's going on? Investigation, and is it a growing awareness? That's not to say that everyone cares about their privacy. Look, a lot of people don't. I mean, if you spend any time on the internet and YouTube, for example, and you see people post all kinds of outrageous things that, you know, that a lot of reasonable people would consider to be extremely private, and they would never post. So, you know, you have a lot of exhibitionists in the world, but I think that many, many people, if not the vast majority of people, if Google and Facebook said, look, okay, you know, we are going to distribute all your information to everybody, I think a lot of people would simply close their accounts. And that's why the Facebooks and the Googles of the world, they bend over backwards to spin all the time about how they're really protecting your privacy, how they really care. I mean, there's a reason why they're doing that. If they really believed that people didn't care about their privacy, they wouldn't spend so much time, money, and effort trying to convince everybody that they're actually protecting their privacy when, in fact, they're not.
Right. Exactly. Well, we have come down to the short rows. We're out of short rows. So why don't you go ahead, Evelyn, one more time and give us the information as to how people can get involved with your two sites. What is the address of those two sites? And hopefully we can get some people that are interested in keeping their privacy private. They'll come on board with you.
Okay, YouMeNow, U as in the letter UMENOW.com. YouMeNow is open to everyone, students and non-students alike. Anyone can join for free, although we also encourage people to become subscribed members because, as I said, we don't accept a dollar from advertisers. And for college students, we have Collegiate Nation. The short way to get to Collegiate Nation is by typing in gocncn.com. And again, any college student with an EDU address can join for free. And we also have a level of membership on Collegiate Nation for $6 a month. And we encourage students to support us that way as well, because we also don't accept a dollar from advertisers. We have banned all apps, all ads, and all games, because they're backdoors to extracting without consent people's private information. And both sites are encrypted so that all the information that you share while on your site, while within our site, is actually the communication is encrypted. And just visit us, join, and you'll see. It's very nice to be on a site where you have no ads and where you know that you're not being tracked.
Now, also, we haven't mentioned yet, and I want to make sure that we get this information in. You have a moniker that you go by, and I think you blog by that as well. Why don't you tell us about your blog?
Yes. I'm known as the Privacy Mom.
So if you Google
Privacy Mom, then you'll find me.
And that's not bad that they find out that track the fact that you're going to see Privacy Mom. That's good.
Thank you. Thank you. I like the term, I like the term Privacy Mom, because actually I'm old enough to be the mother of most tech entrepreneurs, which I hope your audience takes as encouragement that no matter how old you are really young.
There you go. As we say in our sign-off, at 50, you're just getting started.
Absolutely. I'm just getting started.
There you go. Well, thank you very much. I certainly do appreciate the fact that you've been with us today and given us so much good information. It's hopefully something that people will listen to this over and over again and start to take heed in the fact that they're probably being used and abused by many of these sites, and they're going to have to do something about stopping it at this point so it goes no further and keep themselves protected best they can.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for sharing your time and giving me the opportunity to address your audience. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you very much for calling in all the way from Kosovo.
Thank you.
Take care now.
This
has been the Boomer the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio, where we try to bring good conversation to the world. We brought you a pretty good conversation today with a lady all about privacy on the Internet. And you can see her information at Privacy Mom, which is her blog, or also the websites that have been mentioned on the air, Evelyn Castillo Bach. And she has some good information and a lot of great knowledge about what's going on the Internet today. Be sure and join us all next week. We have regular shows every day at 10 o'clock, Monday through Friday. We have great guests lined up for next week. So with that, we're going to say goodbye for the day. Check us out at boomerthebabe.com. Sign up for our new online magazine, which, of course, is Boomer Experience Speaks. And we hope to see you back and have you listen to us again next week. Have a great weekend, everybody. Take care and make the second half of your life the best half of your life. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye now.
You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversations to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as PetePeters47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.